ANC delegates will probably, over the next couple of days, be starting to arrive in Johannesburg, go to their hotel accommodations. The provinces are apparently staying at different hotels. Is that a good idea or a bad idea? I don't know. And then they will register on Saturday, and if registration goes really well, then they will start voting sometime on Sunday for the next president of the ANC. And once that has been done, then they will vote for the other positions. And one of the things they have to decide is whether a proposal that there be two deputy presidents be adopted by the conference, that the losing presidential candidate be accommodated as a deputy president on the winning ANC president's slate. I'm not sure what enthusiasm there will be for that. Lukhona Nguni joins us now from Durban, a political analyst at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. Lukhona, good morning. We've had a resolution of sorts to the Eastern Cape's battles with the Supreme Court dismissing an appeal there, but we've still got litigation around KwaZulu-Natal and also around the Free State. I mean, how can this possibly be a well-organized, ordered, non-chaotic, representing the will of the ANC branches kind of conference?
Well, good morning, John. I think even with the Eastern Cape, we haven't had a resolution per se. What we do know is that the court has just decided not to enter into the fray of the battles going on there. You'll remember that at some point, the National Executive Committee appointed a team of about four people with three sort of technical support, and that makes up a team of seven led by former KwaZulu-Natal Premier and former Minister Sbu Ndebele. And it is because of that I really believe the court felt it could not do anything about the Eastern Cape, because the internal processes have not been exhausted by the very same people that were willing to litigate. Now, if you look at the other provinces, of course, in KwaZulu-Natal, the hanging question is around the Provincial Executive Committee itself. It doesn't affect the branches. It doesn't affect the work retrospectively that would have been done by this Provincial Executive Committee going forward. So let's say even if on the eve of conference, the court says it's not willing to grant the leave for appeal, and therefore this leadership must leave office. It will only affect about a delegation of probably 15, 20 that have come from the Provincial Executive Committee itself, but the branches would be free to go. The most interesting case, I think, for me is the one in the Free State, because the prayers that have been placed before the court seek to say, we want to interdict the entire delegation of the Free State from going to conference. Now, it's almost a bizarre move, because if you can isolate the branches that are subject to queries and disputes and can actually be pinpointed out, then your interdict must deal with those branches, as we saw with the court case prior to the conference that was interdicted. You had about 28 branches isolated, clearly stated what the problems are, and the court sort of said, okay, go rerun this. Now, I don't know how from that court case to this court case you are now claiming about over 100 branches that have not been properly done. So it also starts to seem as if the court time is being taken advantage of or borderline abused. But at the end of the day, to answer the real question politically is to say all of this points to the disintegration of internal capacity from the ANC to deal with its own problems.
And there seems to be, certainly Gwede Mantashe has several times said that he's going to make absolutely certain that the conference starts, that it does what it is supposed to do, and that it finishes. One can't rule out, can one? I mean, it seems almost a dead cert that whichever of Cyril Ramaphosa or Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma loses will approach the courts, because there's almost certain to be some evidence that the winner or people who support the winner might have done something untoward.
Well, certainly the environment is very fertile for that type of behavior, and that type of behavior is well documented in ANC discussion documents over the last 15 years in terms of how there's manipulation of processes, how the branch delegates are bribed from time to time, but also just even leading up to this conference, the sense of sabotage and bad politics that sort of accompany the preparation process for conference. So there are two points where litigation becomes possible. The first one is whether to interdict the entire conference or not. And I feel when you listen closely to the ground, it does seem like on that particular one, it's the Cyril Ramaphosa people who feel they have the numbers, and if there's any indication that those numbers that they've been thinking they have in the bag, given the nominations processes, if they feel that they are losing those numbers, it would be because the provinces that support Ramaphosa and Dlamini Zuma would have tempered with part of the delegations and all of that, and therefore they would seek an interdict for conference not to carry on if it is going to carry on under those circumstances. Yes, you are right. After conference, litigation is also still possible, because remember there's this big issue that we are all looking out for come conference, and that's the adoption of credentials. And there already has been indications that seeds of chaos are starting to be planted, and it's in this fashion. Over the weekend, it was reported that some provinces are disputing the delegation allocations that they were given. So that becomes an important one. Because if you are expected to come with 700 and suddenly you pitch up to conference with 760, and then the secretariat is like, but we don't need this 60, it's not allocated, and then you dispute and argue that, you will end up with almost a situation like in the Eastern Cape where you have to do a warm body count. And it was the second time an ANC conference that's highly contested does a warm body count. So that's saying everybody leave the conference venue, let's count you in one by one, manually. I mean, you have a delegation of about 5,000 people to that conference. It will take you about 2.5 days to do that. And you'll have restless conference attendees who have been stuck in one venue so that you complete that process over the time. So
thank you very much indeed, Lukhon Amguni, political analyst at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. A couple of phrases that will stick with me: the seeds of chaos already being sown, and warm body counts. There's quite a warm body count happening in the studio at the moment. We just can't get our air conditioning right. Middle class problem. Another great initiative spoken about the Ocean Summit was a plastic-free aisle in supermarkets, promoted by two amazingly energetic women of A Plastic Planet in the UK. They said they'd been in talks with Woolworths and Pick and Pay. I chatted to one of the women afterwards, and she said, while the supermarkets had expressed interest, no one wants to be the first in case it fails and they have egg on their face. Really, why would you have egg on your face if you try a plastic-free aisle and it doesn't work? I think, one, if it works, you're going to get more pats on the back, but if you try it and it doesn't work, the pat on the back's not going to be replaced with egg on the face, is it?